If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Extra time. Hello, welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and today I'm joined by Doogie Critchley. Hello, Doogie. How are you?
Hi, Pat. I'm good, thank you. Much better this Monday than last Monday when the football world seemed to be imploding around us. So, yeah, in a much better mood this week. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm kind of glad that the Super League thing is kind of over because I was getting really, really bored of all the fake moralizing from everyone in football where they were like, this is a disgrace. It was like they just realized that rich people are greedy, which I found kind of funny.
Yeah, I suppose it was just, it never been spat in our face so much and it wasn't so evident before. But yeah, no, you make a good point.
Well, on the topic of fan unrest, actually, today we are going to be talking about Tottenham Hotspur, principally. We're going to start by talking about the Carabao Cup final. And then we're going to go on to potential candidates to take over the Spurs job in the summer. Because Ryan Mason, I think, is quite unlikely to get the job on a permanent basis. That's no disrespect to him, but it just doesn't seem like something that Spurs are likely to do. So, Dukes, let's start off with the game itself. Obviously, City won their fourth consecutive League Cup with a 1-0 victory over Spurs at Wembley in front of 8,000 supporters, which was pretty interesting. The result, basically never in doubt, right, Dukes?
Yeah, no, it was always going to be really, really difficult. I mean, obviously Spurs, like City, had a very difficult week in terms of the, you know, speculation around the Super League. They'd obviously sacked Jose Mourinho on that Monday morning, just days before the cup final that he'd got his side to, which I thought was a pretty bold move, especially when you then, you know, give it to Ryan Mason on an interim basis, only 29, younger than, you know, a hell of a lot of his players in that squad. No experience of managing. I thought it was interesting that they didn't give it to Chris Powell, who's been named as his assistant, who's obviously had experience working at various different clubs. He's worked with England, or I think he's still Gareth Southgate's assistant. So maybe there was something in his contract that meant he couldn't take it full time, or at least to the end of the season. But Spurs were comfortably outplayed, really. They never really sort of even threw a punch, let alone landed one, I wouldn't say. City are just a much better side all across the park. They're in much better form, of course. But Spurs would be really disappointed with their display in this. I thought his decision to play Harry Winks ahead of Tanguy and Dembele was bizarre, to be totally honest, given that Winks hasn't played very much football, given how crucial breaking that Man City press was going to be. And a few times Spurs did break the press, but they couldn't really materialise anything in terms of great, you know, shot quality, etc. I mean, they only created 0.04 XG in the entire game to 3.5 from City. And I thought some of the better opportunities that they created, or better openings that they created, it was always the final pass that let them down. I thought Harry Kane, you know, coming back from injury was very off colour. I thought Son had one of his worst games in a Spurs shirt. He was disconsolate at half-time, at full-time, nearly swallowed that. Yeah, so he looked absolutely gutted, and I think he was just slightly let down by his performance. I mean, the best chance they probably got was when Harry Kane ran through and then played it into Højbjerg, who was not the player that you want on an overlap on the left wing, and it showed. He then tried to play in Reguilon, who'd stopped running at this stage, and then he got so angry with Reguilon, and I was like, it wasn't really his fault. Højbjerg completely butchered it, really. So, all in all, not really a great display from Spurs. City were magnificent. I thought they forced Hugo Lloris into numerous saves. Dier and Alderweireld had to make numerous last-ditch blocks as well. So, all in all, not a massive surprise. But I think it's just been one hell of a week to be a Spurs fan. A real roller coaster.
Yeah, the only point where it felt like Spurs might have some say in the match was a couple of times early on, Lucas Moura got into breakaways and he was brought down in one by Aymeric Laporte. He was brought down in another by Ruben Dias. And there was a little bit of controversy about that. But to be honest, I thought it was stupid. It was kind of like the argument was, oh, Dias didn't get booked, or Laporte didn't get booked. One of them didn't get booked and the other did for what seemed like similar fouls. It was bringing somebody down on the counterattack. But I kind of thought that, like, one of them wasn't a foul anyway. It was one of those things where it was like, if you're going to make this decision, you need to make it consistently. But I thought it was the wrong decision anyway. And I thought that generally, Paul Tierney had an absolutely horrific day as the referee. I thought that he got so many decisions wrong. He was kind of lucky in a way that it was so easy for City, because if it had been a tighter match and his decisions had played a bigger part in the end result, then I think he would have been talked about an awful lot today. But it was also really strange, I thought. I thought it was a bad day for kind of commentators and pundits, because I think Gary Neville said, you know, that that Winks had been brought in because it seemed like Ryan Mason wanted players who were better on the ball. And I thought, is this where we are now? Are we claiming Harry Winks is better on the ball than Tongi and Ndombele? Like, I just don't know. It annoys me that these like statements just go completely unchallenged. And I don't know. I'm not saying that Ndombele would have like changed this result drastically, but I think he would have made things a little bit better. And also, of course, we have to talk a bit about Kane, because before the match, Ryan Mason was like, well, Harry says he's fit and that's good enough for me, which is something that we've seen with every Spurs manager. We saw it with Pochettino and we saw it with Mourinho, where they would just say, well, Harry Kane says he's fit, so we're going to play him. And he was clearly not fit. He was clearly not fit. He didn't have a single shot. And yes, that's as much about the team as it's about him. But he was dispossessed twice, which is a match high. And only Lucas Moura, among players who started the game, attempted fewer passes than Kane's 20. And that obviously, there's a disadvantage there for Moura because he was brought off for Bale later in the match. So, I mean, it just seemed like he could never really get into the game. And I do understand, like, look, your whole season almost hinges on this match, so you might as well play Kane. But if they end up, if say Kane does get injured and they end up missing out on the Champions League by a point or two, they're going to have serious, they might have serious regrets about playing Kane in this game. Don't you think, Dukes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he just didn't look fully fit even when he was running with the ball at full speed, and his sort of decision-making seemed like it was impacted. You just know that if a player is less than, you know, a lot of players play with niggles regularly, but this looked like he was sort of below 70% fit. Yeah. And it did just affect their attacking play as well. And with Son having an off day, it was all sort of left to Lucas Moura, and he was making the most of it, of some opportunities, to be fair. He was dribbling well in tight spaces, being brought down, as you said, on a couple of occasions. But yeah, Spurs just weren't really at it. I thought Lo Celso was okay in the centre of midfield, but it just wasn't very free-flowing. And Reguilon at left-back, who's a very aggressive player, as we know, plays on the edge, but he was getting really routinely done by Mahrez, who was excellent, I thought, again. I think he's just got one of the best touches in Premier League history, really. I put him right up there with Bergkamp and, I don't know, Berbatov, maybe. I think Mahrez is such a good player to watch. In terms of cutting in on that left foot, and you know what he's going to do, but still, you can never get close. And Phil Foden, again, I thought was really solid in this game. Some of his finishing let him down on occasion, but there are elements to his game. I'm not saying he'll ever get anywhere near Messi's level, but there are elements of his game that he does seem quite Messi-like in the way he controls the ball in tight spaces, his manipulation of the ball, his awareness as well. He is a really fun player to watch, and I'm just loving watching him develop. So shout out to Phil Foden winning his 9th trophy of his career at 20. Just absolutely crazy. So yeah, City deserved winners in this one.
Yeah, Foden's quite an interesting player. When I try and think of who he's like, I mean, he's like, he's not a huge creator. He doesn't create that many chances. I'd say he's more of a goal threat than he is a creative player, at least in this City setup as it is. But he's just so much faster than this sort of player, you know? Like, normally these guys are like David Silva types, maybe, who drift around and like they get separation from other players technically rather than physically. But Foden seems to have all the technical ability and just an extra half yard of pace that you don't quite expect. So it's a little bit like if you had somebody who would traditionally have been more of a kind of wing fielder, you know, like those kind of like Cazorla types.
Yeah.
But like just a little bit faster. And that's really intriguing, because his attacking passing is only going to get better. And it's possible that if De Bruyne weren't there, Foden would be the passing hub. So
yeah,
I'm quite intrigued to see what he actually turns into. And I wonder if he's going to end up being one of those guys who for club under Guardiola is going to be a very different player to the player he is for England, where he might just be a conventional 10.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with that. I think Guardiola has been I imagine, sort of pleasantly surprised by his output this year. I think he's on 24 goal contributions this season, which is absolutely mental for a 20-year-old. And I looked back because I was just interested about what Wayne Rooney was doing at 20. And he was on one fewer in his first season at Man United, I think, at 20. So it just goes to show the sort of levels that Foden's getting to, obviously in a very different side to that Man United side and playing on a wing in a different position. I'm not trying to really compare them as players, but it just goes to show how superb his output has been. And in a season where I thought City, to be honest, at the start of the season, had maybe left themselves a bit short in attacking areas with Leroy Sané going and David Silva going and only really bringing in Ferran Torres as an attacker, it's really been Phil Foden that's made the difference and kept them so consistent all across the various competitions as well, and popping up with some crucial Champions League goals as well. So he's just been magnificent.
Yeah, he has. And I mean, I completely agree with you about Mahrez and Reguilon as well. I thought Reguilon seemed, strangely for a Real Madrid player, seemed kind of overawed by the occasion. Like, was just really all over the place, made a horrific challenge on De Bruyne early on, got rinsed again and again. But anyway, Spurs now have lost four consecutive cup finals, three in the League Cup, one in the Champions League, since their last trophy, which was the 2008 League Cup.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And probably the most interesting thing from their perspective was the unrest among their supporters. So the fans, there were 2,000 fans allowed from each club and 8,000 fans altogether at Wembley. The Spurs fans were shouting, "We want Levy out," at club chairman Daniel Levy. So there clearly is a massive rift between supporters and club hierarchies at the moment, at least among the big six teams who were involved in this proposal for the European Super League. And what's really going to determine the future of that relationship is probably the decision that Tottenham make about their next manager. Now, Dougs, weirdly, I feel like there's not been that much talk about this, but I suppose that's inevitable given all the chat about the Super League and maybe because this cup final was coming up. But now it's over, we're going to hear a little bit more about managerial candidates. Can you just run me through the list of the candidates and who do you think is the top choice out of the guys who've been mentioned so far?
Sure. I mean, the name that's been linked for months and probably the most consistent name in the hat has been Julian Nagelsmann, the RB Leipzig manager, obviously formerly of Hoffenheim, of course. He's done very well again this year in the Bundesliga in particular. They are now quite adrift of Bayern, but you know, he's done exceptionally well with that consistent goal-scoring number nine, really. Julian Nagelsmann, everyone knows what he can do in terms of getting attacking output out of such a great plethora of attacking players. He turned Andre Kramaric into one of the best players in the league at Hoffenheim. I can't only imagine what he'd be able to do with Son and Kane. I think he's the sort of managerial appointment that would persuade, you know, Spurs' better players to stick around. Obviously, they're also linked with Marcelino as well, from Athletic Club, de Bilbao. He's, you know, has a great CV on him. Top four finishes with Villarreal and Valencia, also on the Copa del Rey there. Has had a bit of a difficult time at Athletic Club in the last month or two in the finals as well. They lost to their rivals Real Sociedad in April in the 2020 final, which was delayed because they wanted fans to be there. And that was a very, very dull game by all accounts. It was separated by a single goal. And then they got completely outdone by Messi in the 2021 Copa del Rey final as well. So slightly difficult time for him there, but they got a great result this weekend against Atletico Madrid, which could prove crucial in the title race in Spain now. Also linked with Erik ten Hag from Ajax, obviously did that fantastic run to the Champions League semi-finals in 2018-19, known as a much more attacking manager, although it's difficult to know how his sort of attacking instincts would translate to a side that's not clearly the best in their league or one of the best in their league. So that'd be an interesting one. And then the two main ones that everyone knows more about are Graham Potter and Brendan Rodgers as well. I think Brendan Rodgers would be my pick, to be honest, because I don't see them getting Nagelsmann. I think he'll go to Bayern Munich, and apparently RB Leipzig are looking for 30 million euros to release him from his contract as well, which is a hell of a lot for a manager. I mean, it makes sense that that should be the sort of price that we pay for managers, but it's kind of unprecedented at the same time. So I'd go for Brendan Rodgers, but I don't know whether he'd swap Leicester City for Spurs at the moment. And then Graham Potter, I think, would be a really interesting appointment as well. Done a very good job at Brighton in slightly unfortunate circumstances as well. They play exceptionally good football. I think everyone's enjoyed watching Brighton this year. Very solid defensively as well. So that's the kind of rundown of candidates. I mean, Pat, of those ones, who's your sort of, you know, your top one, do you reckon?
Well, I agree with Spurs that Julian Nagelsmann is the most enticing of those, but I also agree with you that it's not going to happen. Like, Bayern are going to make it happen if it goes at all. There are already stories in the British press that, like, the Spurs hierarchy have their doubts about Nagelsmann, which to me is always a way of saying, this guy's turned us down, so we're going to pretend that we made this decision all along. But I think there's no shame in losing out on Nagelsmann, and I think they had to at least make an inquiry. Like, he's clearly the best young manager in the world. RB Leipzig's defence this season, really interestingly. I mean, in the past, we've talked a lot about Nagelsmann's attack, and it is really, really good. Like you say, Kramaric, Belfodil, like, these guys, huge production out of them when he was at Hoffenheim. And of course last season as well with Timo Werner, really, really impressive campaign. But this year, the best defensive side in the Bundesliga, they've conceded 25 goals in 31 games. They've conceded 7 goals fewer than every other side in Germany. And they're the only side, in fact, in the Bundesliga to have conceded under a goal a game. So, and plus I think he's formationally, flexible. Yeah. And I think that's something we're going to come back to in a second. So, out of the other guys, I think they all kind of fit the bill, apart from maybe Rodgers.
Really?
Well, Rodgers, in the sense that what we've heard is that Spurs don't have an awful lot of money to make this happen. They don't have a lot of money to pay off a club to get a manager, and they aren't going to commit huge wages to a manager because of all the money they've spent on Mourinho. And with that in mind, I think Leicester are going to demand significant compensation, and Rodgers is going to demand the highest salary you'd have thought of these guys who are listed here. In football terms, I see it. Like, Rodgers, I think, is actually a fundamentally quite conservative manager, but he's not conservative to a fault. Like, if he sees a team with loads of attacking talent and not a lot of defensive talent, like with Liverpool back in 2013-14, he's capable of saying, well, actually the sensible way for this team to play is really, really attacking and gung-ho. Like, he's clever in that regard. On the other hand, I do think there is this cost element, and I also think that it's a really delicate moment for Spurs at the moment. As we've said, there's this kind of fractured relationship between the club hierarchy and the supporters, and as much as I really rate Brendan Rodgers as a manager, and I do, he does have a tendency to look a bit silly in the press, to say silly things at different times, to complain about transfers and to try and have more of a hand in transfers than he's shown he deserves. I'm not sure that those things will appeal to Levy right now. I think he will want somebody who's going to come in and just really kind of steady the ship in that regard. Like, there is some serious reputational damage done by the Europa League, by the Super League proposals. And I'm not sure that Rodgers is the guy to fix that. But on the other hand, results do fix a lot of things, and he probably would get better results. I mean, you said that he's your favourite pick. Can you explain to me what it is in his style or in his track record that really draws you to him?
Yeah, I think he's overachieved at every club he's been at, to be totally honest. Like, that 13-14 Liverpool side, yes, it had some exceptional attacking players, Sturridge, Suarez, Raheem Sterling, of course, still there. Gerrard was still playing well at that time. But defensively, they weren't great. Simon Mignolet in goal. It wasn't a side that I don't think should have got as close to that City and Chelsea side that year. And especially with their resources. I don't think Liverpool hadn't consistently spent as much as they have recently as well. So I thought that was a really good achievement. Obviously, in Scotland, he completely demolished the rest of the league against, you know, not that much opposition at that time, it's got to be said. I mean, Rangers were still recovering at that time, still, you know, pre-Gerrard, etc. And then at Leicester, I've really been quite impressed with them, to be honest. I feel like Yes, they faded towards the end of last season, but this year it feels like they're actually going to finish in the top four, which I think would be a really solid achievement for that squad as well, which, whilst improving, there's still some depth issues, you know, in certain positions. I think some of their signings haven't really worked out as he would have wanted, like Ayuso Perez. Cengizunda hasn't really got a look in on loan as well. But some of his signings at the back, in particular, like James Justin, I thought was phenomenal this year. Timothy Castagne has been a lot better than I thought he was going to be as well. Yeah. So his defensive signings in the last couple of years have worked really effectively. And I feel like he's the sort of name that Spurs would... The top Spurs players would be like, right, this is, again, we're sort of building something here. We might be challenging for trophies, not necessarily the Premier League title in the next couple of years. But I'm kind of changing my mind as I say it, because I feel like in order to win a title, you either need an exceptional defence, an exceptional attack, or a very good both. And I don't think Spurs are going to be ready to challenge for the title anytime soon as it is. So they kind of need to employ someone who's going to make one of those things exceptional. And I don't think Rodgers does either quite well enough. Whereas I feel like Marcelino or Graham Potter could potentially, on the basis of this season, create a defence that gets Spurs back into reckoning. Because under Pochettino, it was really always their defence with Vertonghen and Alderweireld that made sure that they were, you know, finishing with 80 points plus in those couple of seasons when they were closest to the title. And I feel like it's going to be defence that is going to, you know, because Spurs aren't going to score more goals than Man City next year, are they? Sure. I just can't see that in any world. I think Liverpool will be much better next year as well. Mm-hmm. Man United, Chelsea again. So they kind of need that USP of a great defence. And I feel like Potter or possibly Marcelino could be the option there. I'd actually like to see Graham Potter as well. I feel like for an English manager to get that job would be a massive step. And he does deserve it, despite what the table suggests. I think Brighton have just been so much better. And sometimes everyone's like, oh, the table doesn't lie. Sometimes it just does lie. Like Newcastle shouldn't be where they are right now. They should be much lower. Brighton should be much higher than they are right now. And I feel like some sides like Arsenal, well, actually, Arsenal's inconsistency probably does suggest they deserve to be about 10th. But the table is not always totally accurate. So I feel like Graham Potter would be a solid appointment as well, particularly given the conditions of Rodgers being very expensive, Nagelsmann going elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, before I respond to all that, because I think there are lots of really interesting, intelligent points there. Like, I think one of the first things that I think is really important when you start looking at the stats in football is to understand that the table does lie all the time. Like, this idea that after 38 games, like, everything would have shaken out and everyone will be exactly where they deserve to be, I think is absolute nonsense. If the season was 100 games long, then maybe. But as we know, teams are perfectly capable of going on hot streaks and cold streaks. It happens all the time. Not least Graham Potter's Brighton. I mean, with Marcelino, just to come back to Marcelino, I think that he'd be a safe pair of hands. He'd be relatively cheap. He's definitely improved Athletic Club since arriving there. I think before he arrived, they were on about 1.2 points a game. They're now on about 1.3. But if you look at their underlying numbers, before they were basically level. They were creating 1xG a match and conceding 1xG. Horrible attack, very good defence. Now their attack is pretty decent, 1.4xG a game, and the defence has stayed the same. In fact, it's got very, very, very slightly better. Just under 1xG against per game, which is the second best defence in the league since January to Barcelona. So Marcelino does just improve teams. He does. On the other hand, he plays relatively defensive football. He's historically favoured a 4-4-2. And while I think that elements of the Spurs squad could work in 4-4-2, like for instance Son and Kane up front, I'm totally fine with that. I'm not sure that it is the best fit for their talent. And it's a little bit like... Marcelino, in a way, is to me kind of like a modern Benitez, which I mean absolutely as a compliment. I think he's extremely intelligent. He sets his team up very sensibly. Like, he never overcommits. His teams generally do better than they should. But also, it makes him quite a hard sell to a big club at this point in time. And I think that if I were Spurs, I would be more inclined to take a gamble on somebody who could be great. And so while I do understand, I understand the Rodgers thing, I think that Erik ten Hag and Graham Potter would be guys I'd be looking at very, very seriously. obviously there's always the kind of you manage Ajax in the Eredivisie knock against Ten Hag, and I think that's totally fair enough. But he's due to win his second title at Ajax this week. They're 12 points ahead of PSV, and they've got a goal difference that's plus 33 better than PSV. And bear in mind, you know, this is Roger Schmidt's PSV. So they need a point from their last four games to be champions, and may not even need that. But also, you know, there's that overperformance in the Champions League behind him. There's his reputation for developing youngsters. You know, David Neres, Ryan Gravenberg, who's come through now, Van de Beek, De Ligt, De Jong, Brian Brobby. Like, these guys coming through the ranks, it's clearly something he's capable of doing. And even relative to previous incarnations of Ajax, they are shockingly dominant. Like, I mean, we can't figure out how that would relate to the Premier League, but they're a high-pressing possession side. Those are definitely things that Spurs will be looking for, I think. And right now, Ajax concede 8 shots a game, and they take 20 shots a game, which is absolutely insane. And even in the Champions League, I think they've still been a pretty dominant shot side. And I think with Ten Hag, it's a good opportunity to get him, because I think that if Barcelona change manager, which I'm not sure they will, because I think they're now odds on probably to win La Liga. But if they do, they'll go for Xavi. Bayern are going to go for Julian Nagelsmann. So I think that Ten Hag, there might be an opportunity here for Spurs. I mean, how would you feel about this, Dukes? Like, out of 10, kind of, what would you give that as a managerial hire if they were to go and get him?
Well, I can't really think of any massive negatives, but at the same time, he just wouldn't be my first choice just because he's a little bit of an unknown quantity. At the same time, I mean, it's difficult because I was also complimenting Rodgers for his work in Scotland, yet I'm saying Ten Hag's doesn't count as much. So I'm being a bit of a hypocrite, I think. And yeah, his talent development there has been absolutely superb. They were great in the Champions League again this year. I thought they were really unlucky to not get out of the group against Liverpool and Atalanta. I think they gave them both good games on every occasion they played them. And that talent development is going to be a really promising factor for Levy, as we know, who loves to make the most of the players that he has available and try and, you know, use the market effectively. I think for some of the players coming through, the Joe Rodens, the Ndombeles, maybe Harry Winks would come back into the fold as well. But I just feel like that Spurs squad does need quite a lot of investment, and we've never really seen him, because of the budget he's been given at Ajax, having a large amount of money. And who would he target in terms of that centre-back area that definitely needs strengthening? You could probably look at a new right-back for Spurs as well. I think you could probably move on Moussa Sissoko and get another central midfielder. Mm-hmm. And then that right-wing slot at Spurs, if they don't, you know, stick with Gareth Bale, which I wouldn't suggest they should, they could probably look to strengthen there as well. And then they've obviously got the Kane factor overriding all of this. Is Erik ten Hag's appointment something that's going to keep Harry Kane sticking around? Possibly, but I don't know, to be honest. I don't think it's definitely obvious that he'd stay if he was appointed. So there's some question marks there for sure. But I think all these candidates for where Spurs have been this year and how, you know, the tragic football they've played at times and the tragic results they've got, to have all these names in the hat, these are some great options. And I think any one of these guys would be an interesting appointment who would do better than Jose Mourinho would have if he'd stayed in charge.
Do you think, based on what you just said there, do you think it's realistic that Kane could leave this summer? Because I've kind of waved it off. I just think he's got too long left on his contract, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's 2024, doesn't he? So, I mean, it's going to take a monster bid. And unless he kicks up a fuss, which nothing suggests he will, because he loves Spurs, obviously came through there. They've given him so much in his career. It's going to be very difficult for him to leave. I think he kind of Zaha'd himself with that contract, to be honest. Because, both of them tied themselves to long-term deals. It's a bit like Jack Grealish as well. It's going to be very difficult for Jack Grealish to leave Aston Villa this summer as well. And a lot of players around Europe have done a similar sort of thing. So they've, you know, guaranteed themselves a hefty paycheck for the next 2-3 years, but maybe, you know, scuppered their long-term future of winning trophies, which I think it's going to be a crying shame if Harry Kane doesn't win a trophy in his Spurs career. But to be honest, right now, it's a real possibility. What is he, 28? He's probably got 5 years left at the top. Do you think Spurs are going to win a Premier League title in the next 5 years? I don't think so. Probably not a Champions League, maybe a Europa League or a domestic cup, but there's no guarantee. I mean, so it's going to be a difficult one for Harry Kane. But yeah, if anyone does have the money this summer, they're going to target Mbappe or Haaland ahead of him. So I don't know how it really happens.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I don't really see them winning a major trophy. I think they definitely could win an FA Cup. You know, like Arsenal have won a bunch of FA Cups, like in a period where they were substantially worse than Spurs. So it's obviously doable. But it's weird to hang around at Tottenham in the hope you might win the FA Cup. Like, it doesn't really feel like enough. I don't know. I kind of feel like with all this talk, we're getting closer to the point where I say, I feel like our top choice should be Graham Potter here.
Well, I'd be happy with that as well. I think Graham Potter has created a side out of very little that plays some of the best football in the Premier League consistently. Yes. I think it's just awesome to watch Brighton at times. And some of the development of players under him as well, like Lewis Dunk. I think Ben White's been excellent this year, always great for Leeds last year as well. Basuma's turned into one of the best defensive midfielders in the league. He's getting fairly good output out of Trossard. They've just got Maupay and Welbeck up front, which, no disrespect to them, particularly Neil Maupay has had a shocking year in front of goal. And they would be far higher up the league if he'd stuck away a few more of his chances.
Yeah, I think they've got 49 expected goals on the board, but they've scored 33. But their defence has been sensational. As you were saying before, like, I think it's rated third best in the Prem by expected goals against. But look, I mean, we should maybe like dig into this a little bit. I know we've talked about Brighton before, but like, if you don't know why we rate Brighton so highly and Graham Potter so highly, expected points currently suggest they should be fifth. While they're 17th. Now, I would say that's overstating it a little bit. They've spent an awful lot of this season trailing, and they haven't managed to score very often. And that means that you tend to put up more shots and more XG when you're trailing. So that means that their numbers are probably slightly inflated across the season. You know, if like Neil Maupay scores his first shot of the game instead of them like scabbing in a goal in the 95th minute from a corner, then they probably don't attack quite as much, you know, during those remaining minutes. But clearly, like, they're a good possession side. They're really quite versatile. They have a really interesting setup. And as much as we talk about guys like Aurier, Sissoko, Eric Dier as weak links in the squad, and I do think they are, this Brighton squad is not better. Like, I mean, it isn't. Like, there's definitely talent there, but it's not really better. And when you look at their shots plus minus, like, I often go back to shots plus minus as just like a really good rule of thumb for how teams dominate territory, how good they are at limiting opponents. Brighton allow their opponents 8.8 shots against them per game, which is between Chelsea and Liverpool this season. It's really, really good. And they take, I think it's 13.1 shots a game. So overall, each game, they're taking 4.3 shots more than they're allowing. By comparison, Spurs are allowing 1.5 shots more each game than they are taking. And this is with, you know, Harry Kane up around the 4 shots a game mark, with Heung-min Son, who's not a big volume shooter, but certainly shoots a decent amount. Like, it's just incredible to me. So, like, that difference in output, when you take into account the disparity in squads, really suggests that Graham Potter has got something special going on here. And I think as well, you know, low cost, speaks the language, has a little bit of experience in the league, has a bit of experience working on a budget, won't demand huge investment, I think, around the squad, won't complain. Like, there are lots and lots of reasons to like Graham Potter. And so I think, actually, while I'd definitely take a strong look at Ten Hag, because I think he could be special, to me, Graham Potter actually is probably my top here.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah, I'd still go, I'm sticking with Rodgers as my number one. Don't think it's going to happen. Well, Nagelsmann's my number one, Rodgers two. Neither of them are going to happen. And then, yeah, I'm going Potter, Ten Hag, Marcelino, I think. But yeah, I'd be happy with any of them, to be honest. I think Spurs, there is work to be done to the squad, but actually it's pretty good. And I think they've underachieved this year in the Europa League and the Premier League in particular. And I think they could be in the top four mix next year, which, considering the standard of teams at the top of the Premier League, there's a lot of very good teams from, you know, sort of second to sort of sixth. That's not a too bad achievement for Spurs. They're obviously not going to win a title anytime soon, a Premier League title anytime soon, but if they get this appointment right, they'll start getting back in the same way. The thing that sort of undercuts my whole feeling about Spurs at the moment is just What if they hadn't got rid of Pochettino? And what if they'd given him the investment that they gave Mourinho? I just think they'd be much closer than they are at the moment. And they'd probably stand a better chance in cup competitions. I mean, Pochettino has shown again this year with PSG in the Champions League. He hasn't done so well in the league so far, but in the Champions League, how good he is over two legs, how good he is over one-legged cup ties. So, yeah, it's just a shame that he never got the chance to get this sort of level of investment.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, though at the end, it felt a little bit like he kind of had to go because it seemed like people had kind of given up. Like, you remember that 3-0, was it 3-0 defeat to Brighton?
Yeah.
It did feel like the wheels had come off, but I do know what you're saying. Like, it's kind of, it's a little bit like with Newcastle, you think, why couldn't they have got some of these players in for Benitez instead of getting them in for Steve Bruce? But, okay, so let's leave Nagelsmann aside, but we would really like to hear from you guys in the comments if you're at Football Daily Podcast on YouTube. Let us know what you think. Dukes is going for Brendan Rodgers as the top choice. I'm going for Graham Potter as the top choice, though we do broadly agree here. I'm going to pretend that we're in disagreement. Please let us know who you think is correct, who Spurs should go for next. Doogie, thank you very, very much for being on the podcast today. It's always good to have your expertise, especially on European managers. What would you like to point to? Is there anything interesting going out at the moment that you think people would like to see?
Yeah, sure. So we've sort of left the Super League behind, as have the rest of Europe, hopefully. So that was all last week's content. So we're back on our usual stuff. And this week, why don't you go check out ERU on Eurofootball Daily, in which we talked about Man United and Arsenal possibly chasing a cut price deal for Alisson Player of Gladbach.
Oh, that is an interesting one. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
We weren't sure about it either.
Yeah. Well, I think that isn't he 28 and like his ankles are falling off? Yeah. Not sure about that one. But thank you very much, Dukes. And thanks to you guys for watching or listening at home. Make sure that you're subscribed to us as a podcast on your favorite podcast app and at Football Daily Podcasts on YouTube. Next week, not sure what the podcast is going to look like. It's... Monday is a bank holiday, and it is also the due date for my baby. So there's a possibility...
Busy Monday.
There's a possibility that I'm not here next week, so...
Are you not going to do it live from the birthing room? I thought that was the plan, no?
I don't know what the Wi-Fi is like in the maternity unit. but yeah, my guest on next week's podcast will be my wife as she attempts to give birth to my little girl.
Oh my goodness. So
yeah, thank you very much, and who knows when we'll see you guys next, but keep your eyes peeled because something will come out next week, I imagine. Thanks again, Dukes. Thanks to you guys, and we'll see you later. Bye.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.